love starting on time. So with that, hey, I'm excited to have Tom Ziegler with us tonight. Tom is the proud son of the legendary speaker Zig Ziegler, and for the last 20 years has been the CEO of Ziegler Performance. Tom is a sought-after presenter, speaker, and author, and he and his dad have created multiple best-selling programs, books, and training courses. In the Ziegler podcast, which I've been a guest on, which was amazing to be a guest on, Tom launched a few years ago and averages over 200,000 downloads per month. If you haven't checked it out, make sure and check it out. I'm honored to call Tom a good friend for over 20 years and honored to have him join us tonight. Welcome, Tom Ziegler.
Hey, Kyle. Great to be here. I'm excited.
Good. Yeah, me too. We, we've gotten to reconnect the last couple of months quite a bit. We had that 24-hour trip, four meals in 24 hours, plus we shared the stage in El Paso. That was pretty cool.
That was
we'll
fun.
We'll have to tell that story tonight. And then, of course, you were a guest at the Ron White, the memory and marketing event he and I did, and you and I got to do a really cool Ziegler and Roan panel. And at the same time, you shared on the Trinity of Transformation, and wow, you really connected with the people. And I said that night, I said, Tom, I would love to have you as a guest on the Inner Circle call, so it's exciting to have you tonight.
Well, I'm excited to be here, and just for everybody listening, Kyle and I go back many, many years, and I tell Kyle this just about every time I see him. I've done business in our area, in our network for, gosh, over 30 years now. And Kyle and I have done many things together. And he's the only one who I've done many deals with who says, this is what's going to happen. And then every time we do it, it's better than what he told me. So that's hard to find in any industry. And so that's why I'm grateful to be here and grateful for our relationship.
Wow, Tom. Okay, so I'm so honored by you saying that. Thank you so much. And I've been honored working with you and your dad, and what you've done the last 20 years as a CEO is incredible, and so many different programs you have, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk a little bit about that before the call's over. But I have some questions, and I want to open it up for all the callers to ask some questions as well. I do want to say I hear some background noise, so if someone has not muted their phone, please do. So make sure and do that for us. But, Tom, back at the Ron White two-day we did together, you talked about the difference between success, significance, and legacy. And, again, it's so profound, and I hate to ask you to try and dilute that too much and try and put that in a 2 to 5 minute narrative, but could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, that's what I love focusing on. We come across so many people who have the wrong definition of success, and even worse than that, they don't aim high enough. And so what I like to share is our definition. Success is, obviously it's having more of the good things that life has to offer. We teach balanced success, meaning in the wheel of life, you have seven areas. You have the mental, the spiritual, the physical, the family, the financial, the personal, and the career, or whatever your revenue engine is. And we want you to be successful. We believe that you should be successful in all seven areas. Dad said this. He said that success is the maximum utilization of the abilities that God gave you. And so what does that really mean? That means that we can't compare our success to somebody else's because we all have different abilities. And what I've noticed is that people have the wrong definition. They go after fame or money or, some other thing, and they neglect the other parts of their life. And at the end of the day, they don't have friends, they don't sleep well, and they're not happy with where they are. But here's something interesting. Success is important, but significance, wow, that's something else entirely. Significance is when you help someone else be, do, or have more than they thought possible. Significance is when you're able to understand the difference between happiness and joy. Happiness is circumstantial. Joy can happen at any time. It doesn't matter the circumstance. And there is no greater joy than when you help someone else achieve something. And then we take it one further step and we talk about legacy. I say that legacy is a transference of habit. Legacy is when you teach and transfer the wisdom, the habits, the knowledge, the integrity, the character to those you love, your family, the people you do life with, and you transfer it in such a way that they're able to make good decisions that'll ripple through eternity. And so here's the key to this. When your goal, your objective, is to leave a legacy by design, then success and significance are part of the package. If your goal is success, there's no guarantee that you're going to end up with significance and a legacy. And so that's why I say we need to aim high. We need to think about legacy. We need to think about transferring the things that we've learned, the knowledge, the wisdom, the character, the integrity, so that those we love know how to make good decisions. I mean, look around. Don't we wish that the people who are leading this country can make good decisions? Don't we wish that the business owners out there who are doing things that make you shake your head can make good decisions? And it goes back to the roots. Where do they learn how to make the decisions they're making? That's what we can do something about.
You said so much in that amount of time and so many, you know, huge nuggets. I guess my question would be, if you're focused then on legacy, give us some ideas on how to focus on creating the legacy and to have the wisdom to know what that really would look like.
Well, I go back to an old Zig Ziglar quote. I go back to the well because Dad had so much wisdom. But he said this. He said, if you aim at nothing, you'll hit it every time. And so the first thing we've got to do is we got to decide what's the legacy we want to leave. And a great place to start is, what do you want people to say about you behind your back? You know, what are the words that you want others to describe you when you're not in the room? Is it integrity? Is it compassion? Is it love? Is it kindness? Is it, hey, you can count on him? Whatever those words are that you want people to say behind your back, then we start to develop the habits that create those words. Seth Godin came to our offices. He's a friend of mine, and we were talking, and I was doing some research on him, and I said, Seth, I noticed that you're talking a lot about trust and that your number one priority is the scalability of trust. Explain that to me. And, of course, Seth is, you know, one of the great minds and leaders of our time. And he said, oh, it's easy. He said, Tom, he said, every time we interact with somebody, every time we send an email, every time we have a conversation, every time we send a proposal, whatever the situation is, trust is either building or trust is dwindling. Mm-hmm. And he said, my number one priority in every interaction that I have is I want to build trust. I want to create trust. And what's funny is that Seth was a product of the right input. He listened and read to the greatest leaders. He told me that he could at one time recite all of Dad's old cassette tapes word for word. He wore them out.
Wow.
As he listened to them hour by hour. And in the series, Secrets of Closing the Sale, Dad said that there's five reasons that people don't buy. No need, no want, no hurry, no money, and no trust. And the biggest reason of these is trust. And so Seth just flipped that on its head, and he made his business model like this. Hey, you know what? If I win their trust, then as soon as I have a solution, they're going to buy it because the hard part's done. So that's where we start. We define the words we want to be known by, and then we create the habits that allow that to become a reality.
I love how you did make that simple. Like I didn't know what the answer was going to be, but you made that so practical and so simple. And a couple of things occurred to me. One is, in business, I see one of the big challenges where people are constantly taking shortcuts, right? They're trying to find the fastest, quickest, simplest way, oftentimes at the expense of doing things the right way. So I see that on the business side. On the personal side, and I got to tell you, the personal side is where I struggle with sometimes, is when you talk about being kind and being nice, and I know at times I can get a little triggered, or I can, you know, I'm very protective about my time or protective about privacy or whatever it may be. But you did say then you have to take those words and flip them and figure out the habits. Do you have any more you want to share about that or the two things I just mentioned?
Sure. Well, let's talk about being protective of your time. You know, my dad had an interesting challenge. He would get booked. You know, he couldn't do every engagement that he got asked to go do. And, of course, everybody wanted to treat him like royalty when he came to town. So their goal was to pick him up from the airport, take him back to the hotel, take him to the nicest place in town to eat dinner, introduce him to their friends, meet him for breakfast, give him a tour of the company, and then have him go speak. And you do that three times a week, and you're going to be worthless, right? And
right.
So, I mean, you just can't do it. And so he set a system in place. He created a habit. Lori Majors, his assistant, would call the person or the group that booked him and said, oh, we appreciate it so much. Here's Mr. Ziegler's schedule. He's going to arrive at 5, and you can pick him up in a car, or he'll take a taxi, or you can provide a limo. It doesn't matter. But if you come to pick him up, just make sure that it's a man who picks him up, or if it's a woman, that's fine. Just make sure there's two or more people, because his policy is he's never alone with another woman. That's how he respects his wife and honors that relationship. And then he's going to go back to the hotel, and he's going to get a workout in. It's going to take about an hour. So at about 7 o'clock, he's going to come down for dinner in the hotel, and he would love for you to join him for dinner. But at 8:15, he's got to go upstairs and get ready to bed and start preparing so he can be the best person he can be on stage, because that's how he changes lives. So he just flipped it, right? He just put his values in front and let the client know, hey, the reason that you're inviting me to come is because you want me to deliver a life-changing speech. That's my number one priority. And so I've got to do everything possible to do that. And so in your own case, or any of our cases, because everybody on this call is busy, we've got businesses, we have relationships,
right,
we have things to do. We've got to look at our number one priority. How can I build trust in that number one priority? And in this case, if Dad stayed up too late, didn't keep his health in order, and then didn't do well on stage, he would erode trust. So,
And part of it, and I love that, and part of it, he was definitely communicating. He was being direct, right? I know Jim, and you and I had that panel, right, where we talked about Jim and Zig, and it was so cool. I know, like, Jim did not want to get hijacked by anybody, but Jim also wasn't going to be as direct. Like, if someone picked him up, he was probably, you know, he wouldn't be so direct to say, hey, take me here, drop me off here, I don't have time. But it sounds like your dad was more direct, so he could take that risk to be picked up just by anybody.
He was direct, but mainly what he did is he asked his support to be direct, because he wanted to be, you know, the kind, generous, do everything he can in front of him. And so the schedule was already pre-planned. It was prepared. Now, I will say this about Dad, and that is, when he was done speaking, he would literally autograph until it was time to go to the airport. He would meet people. I've been at Amway events where he got done speaking at 1 o'clock in the morning, and we didn't leave the building until 4:30 in the morning.
That's amazing.
And it's because he knew he didn't have another assignment that required 100% of his energy. And so what he did is he gave 100% of what he had to the people who were in front of him. And he did that everywhere. I can remember him coming off stage drenched in sweat many, many times, because he never held anything back. It was always all I've got every time.
No, I love that. For sure, right? That's a lifelong philosophy he had always had, or was, do you know if that kept developing as he grew, or?
You know, I think he was always a hard worker. And if you follow his story, he gets out of the Navy, he gets married, he gets his first job, doesn't do well in school, doesn't do well in his first job, doesn't sell really anything. And about 2.5 years into it, I mean, he attended every meeting, he was on time, he did exactly what they said, but in a sales force of 7,000, he was never in the top 5,000. 2.5 years in, his, you know, kind of the guy that he respected, the person he looked up to, his name was PC Merrill. He saw him in a meeting, he's put his hands on Dad's shoulder, he looked him in the eye, and he said, "Zig, in all my life, I've never seen such a waste. But you could be a champion if you believed in yourself and went to work on a regular schedule." And Dad believed him. This was a man he respected who had earned his trust. And so that was the day he went on the mission to understand what does it mean to believe in yourself. And that was the day that he made the commitment that he was going to start knocking on doors at 9 a.m. every day, because he was in direct sales. And once you do that, there's a proverb. It's a Proverbs 11:25, and it says, "One who waters cannot help but be watered." When you think of a garden, when we're out there watering the garden, we get wet in the process. So really, the secret to Dad's success was real simple. For 40 years, first thing in the morning, the first 3 hours, he read and researched information. He studied God's word. He took all these things that he was learning with one goal in mind: to simplify it in a way that he could deliver it in such a way that somebody could receive it and it would change their life. Well, I think all of us would agree that, golly, what if every day for just 20 minutes we tried to read or learn something with the whole purpose of going out and sharing it with somebody else to benefit them? How different would our life be at the end of the year? I mean, it's a simple concept, but it's a life-changing habit, and that's really his secret. I mean, if anybody wants to know what was the habit or the practice that he did that made him who he was, that was it.
No, and I believe that. Is that something you're able to incorporate as well? Not necessarily the same length of time, but is that a model you try and follow yourself?
One of my quotes is, legacy is a transference of habit. And I learned habits from Dad that he never taught me. And what I mean by that is, I can remember as, you know, a young worker at the company, I think I was like 25, and I got to the office at 7:30, and I was so proud of myself being there 30 minutes early. And I called Dad on the phone because I wanted him to know that I was at the office. And I said, "Hey, Dad, I'm at the office. What's going on?" He said, "Oh, I've had a great morning. I've been working on my book for 3 hours." So now what do? I get up at 4:30 or 5 every day. And the first 90 minutes at least is spent doing what I call the perfect start, which is kind of replicated what Dad did. And it's the most valuable time of the day. I get more done before most people are up. And I have a routine that I go through. It's a habit. One of the things that I say is, you talk about everybody wants the shortcut to success or the fast way. This is what I say. I say the fastest way to success is to replace bad habits with good habits. So look in your own life. What are the little bad habits that you have that are holding you back? Get rid of them and replace them with little good habits. If we have, you know, 5 little bad habits that cost us 5 minutes a day, and we replace them with 5 little good habits that bring power to those minutes, that's a huge change. I mean, that's a life-changing change right there.
You just created 2 questions for me. I wanted to ask you a question about the 90 minutes, but now I have a question about the good habits, bad habits. But let's go back to the 90 minutes. Are you open to just sharing? Because I know everyone on the call is probably interested in what that would look like.
What I do is I call it the perfect start. And I'm writing a book. Actually, the book's written. It's through the editing stage with the publisher. It's coming out next year, and I talk about it in the book. But in my perfect start, this is the way I do it. I get up, I get my coffee because I like coffee, and I go into my office. I don't check email. I don't do text. I don't do social media. And my first 5 minutes is the two chairs that I do. And Bob mm-hmm. Bodine, a good friend of mine, wrote the book Two Chairs. And really, it's real simple, and it's the 80-20 thing. And what I do is I pray or meditate, and I ask three questions. I say, God, do you know what's going on? Are you big enough to handle it? And what's the plan? And so then I listen, right? I just reflect and listen. And then I read. I'll read a little bit of Bible, a little devotional. That whole time takes 20 minutes maybe. And then I do inspirational reading, or I do other kinds of reading that I want to learn more about. Then I get into the performance planner. The performance planner is our goal-setting system, and I plan my day out, the major things I want to get done, the four goals that I'm working on. And I do something interesting. In the performance planner, there's a schedule. Now, this schedule is not meant to replace your phone or Outlook or Google Calendar or anything like that. But what I do is I write the appointments that I'm going to have down, the speaking engagements that I'm going to have, and like a call like this, I wrote it down, right? So it's in my schedule. And then I do a one-minute mental model of what's going to happen. And so for every appointment, every presentation, for 1 minute, I just think about it. What's the group going to be like? What are some likely questions? What would be a great outcome? What are some points that I want to hit? If it was a face-to-face meeting with somebody, I would think about, okay, what's the personality in the room? What are the likely objections that they might have? What are how are the dynamics between each person in the room? Those are the kind of questions that I go over in my mind. But it's only for a minute. And the reason I do that is I'm kind of a nerd. I like studying the brain. And there's a lot of research that says if we plan out how we want it to go, when we get in that situation, even if it goes 180 degrees different, we are better able to adjust and handle it than if we did nothing.
Mm.
And so to me, that's so valuable, because how many times have you been to a meeting, there is no agenda, somebody doesn't have an objective. And so that's what I like to do. So I do that mental model for each one of those appointments. So that whole part right there takes about 45 minutes, everything I just said. And then the next 45 minutes, I try to focus on the one thing I want to get done. You know, what's the number one project? What's the number one objective? And I do that, and this is the hardest discipline I have, and I fail as much as I make it. But I try to do all that before I break down and check email. But that's the... And the reason is email is reactive. I want to be proactive, right? I want to get ahead. And so if I can get all that done by 6:30 in the morning and then get my emails done by 7, I'm still ahead of the world, and we're on track.
I love that. So this taking 1 minute per appointment to visualize and think about, how long have you been doing that?
Oh, probably about a year. I picked up on it a year ago. I saw somebody speaking about, there was a Qantas flight that left Singapore. I think it was going to Sydney, and one of the engines disintegrated in air. And like 23 systems on the plane went down like a domino effect almost immediately. And the pilot was able to bring the plane in and land it. It's one of the, you know, greatest aviation feats in history. And when they started interviewing all the pilots and listening to the co-pilots and the tape recorders of the event, everybody kept their calm. Everybody went down the checklist. And what they discovered was that the captain had taken his crew, and on the shuttle ride to the airport, he started throwing scenarios at them. What will you do if this happens? What will you do if this happens? And so they were all going through the checklist on the shuttle ride over there. And then something that none of them could have anticipated happened, and it never happened before. And they were able to handle it because they were able to quickly diagnose, hey, there's 23 things that are wrong, but only four of them are important. Those four are what keep us in the air. And so they were able to quickly focus on what they could control, and they landed the plane.
Hmm.
So that was kind of the motivation behind that. So,
and the reason I ask is, you know, we talked, I think it was last week, and I really have felt this really strong intention, and you've had a lot of energy behind every conversation we have. And I feel like that is a little different than in the past. So I feel like it even shows up on you know, when you're in person, it shows up on calls. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but I can feel the intentionality more than I maybe had in the past. And so that's a great example for me to do that as well. So I appreciate you sharing.
I appreciate that. And I think some of that is there's one thing to be the custodian of somebody else's legacy. And I know you felt that to Jim Rohn, right? I mean,
right.
You were out there. You were preparing the stage. And so your life was around, just like my life was around, how do I put Zig Ziglar in the best possible position? And so it's kind of an echo, right? It's kind of a, now I'm in this and I'm like, wow, this is so amazing. I've got everything I learned, but I'm a different human being. I can't do the things in the same way that Dad did them. It's got to be my own way. And so when I start linking things that I've learned from other people with what Dad taught me and what I've experienced, that allows you to step into who you are. And that's a powerful step. That changes the passion by which you share things. I mean, I'll just tell you, I was on the phone 2 days ago, and a young man, 25 years old, says this to me. He says, "Your daddy's why I quit trying to commit suicide."
Mm.
Now, that'll break you down in 2 seconds.
Yeah. Yes.
Because he's 25 years old, and he probably only got the CDs after Dad passed away. I don't know how he got them. And now he's out there, and then he tells me this. He says, "The last time I ever talked to my father," he said, "my father is an abusive, mean alcoholic. The last time I ever talked to my father, I was in my house and I was listening to your dad, and your dad said, 'You've got to reprogram your mind.' And my father started mocking that. And he said, 'I walked out of the house listening to your dad on my speakers while my real dad was mocking me.'" And Kyle, if that doesn't tell you that the world needs this message, I don't know what does. I mean, because there's kids out there whose lives are at stake, and the people on this call, you guys are the ones who are going to meet people every single day. They're going to cross your path, and if you have the eyes to see, there's somebody who's hurting, and if you can just give them that word of encouragement, that little bit of support, that smile, that thank you, wherever you are, it could be the difference. Just like this young man said, "Your daddy's the reason I quit trying to commit suicide."
Hmm.
That'll get you going.
It's so powerful. I'm thinking, you know, you and I've talked about social media posts and, you know, the days of being opinionated and kind of knowing it all versus being a listener and actually being more about, you know, impacting people. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yes. And I've got a new opinion. Well, 2 years ago, when this whole last presidential campaign kind of started up, I quit making any comments one way or the other, just because you can't have a legitimate discussion. And so what I believe is that people are desperate to be heard. And the context is not the public forum anymore. It's got to be one-to-one, face-to-face, small group, a call like this, where people, they just have a place where they can say, I'm afraid. The reason I'm acting out is I'm afraid. Here's why I'm afraid. And then they've got to have some hope and encouragement. And then I'll tell you something else that's new, and I don't know if this is just me or if I'm just reacting, but yesterday on our Zig Ziglar fan page, 4.5 million people, we started, something happened to the page and we couldn't share posts anymore. They were saying there was some link. I don't know if we made the political correct police mad. I don't know what it is. I mean, there's nothing on our site that would be objectionable, but all of a sudden our site is shut down. You can still read it. You just can't share it. And here's what came to my mind. Everybody on our team, nobody cared. If that had happened a year ago, I mean, it would have been the all-nighter getting that thing back up, right?
Right.
And now it was like, well, you know, it's just probably a glitch. We're just missing a few shares. No worries. I mean, they're working on it. I'm not saying they're not working on it. I'm just saying that the belief that this is the future, this is the way we connect, this is the
right
thing that's going to shape, it's gone. I mean, if it hasn't
right
already gone, it's close to being gone. It's about small groups. It's about people who are sharing life's journey together who will tell you their scars. And they'll do it with tears in their eyes, and it's okay.
There's someone on this call, Carla, who shared, we were on a phone call talking about a book project, and she talked about the difference between a scar and a wound. And when people are speaking out of their wound, you know, oftentimes they're not healed up yet, right? And it doesn't come out right. But when people can talk from a scar, you know, they're not triggered. They're not living in the wound. And I think that's the other thing. We might have strong opinions or we might have circumstances. If we can speak from our own scars, then it's powerful. But you see a lot of people on social media talking from wounds, right? And so that probably lacks perspective. It lacks wisdom.
Yeah, that's a great illustration. One of the things I learned from Dad is, you know, when somebody's wounded, when they're going through a horrible situation, you know, whether it's a medical crisis or a separation or they're losing a business, the worst thing you can do is look them in the eye and say, I know exactly how you feel. You have no clue.
Right.
I mean, here's the thing. We lost our dad, right? But my sisters, they each had their own relationship with Dad. It was unique. There's no way I know how they're feeling. Because the relationship is what we mourn the relationship, and our relationship is uniquely ours. But what people need to hear is, oh, my goodness, I know you're going through it. I have no idea what you're feeling. When I went through something, this is what helped me. Right? I mean, you're acknowledging
right
that. You're acknowledging that their grief or their anger or their hurt or their wounds is uniquely theirs. And then you're saying, man, somebody came to me and they shared this with me and it helped me. That's
right
how we help.
Love that. You know, about 20 minutes ago, I was going to open it up for questions, but I kept asking more questions. I couldn't help myself. So this time I've got more if we don't have anyone asking, but that never happens. So I want to share, Tom, with the rest of everyone. I'm sorry for taking up so much time with my questions. So if you have a question for Tom Ziegler, this is your chance. Tom has so much wisdom, so much perspective. And so don't be shy. Jump in. If we have a pause, I've got my own list of questions. So jump in, please. And you make sure you're not muted if you are going to ask a question.
Yeah, Tom, this is Doug Kelly up in Los Angeles, and I just had a quick question about your faith. How strong is your faith in all that you're doing? It sounds like it's a very much a part of your schedule and a part of what you share and do.
Yeah, well, it's not a secret. I am I call myself a Christ follower, and my faith is very, very important to me. It's kind of what I base everything off of. It's really the thing that helps me get through when I don't understand what's going on. But I'll tell you this, I struggle just like everybody else. I have times where I'm like, what's going on here? It doesn't make any sense. But at the end of the day, just having that solid foundation and a perspective and a belief that says this is how we should this is how we should do life. I'll tell you right up front, I'm a big believer in love. And when people come in, and I speak all over the world, whether it's Europe or Australia or Asia, in a lot of those places, it's kind of taboo to talk about faith. You know, you just don't do that from the stage. And I tell people in all of those environments the same thing. I believe in love. And, you know, I don't really want to tolerate you. I want to love you. So if you don't believe in God or if you have a different lifestyle, that's okay. Is it okay if I just love you? And I tell you what, when you approach it that way, it opens all kinds of doors, and then people start asking about what you got because they might want some of it. So it was a long answer to a short question. I hope that covered the bases for you.
Excellent. Thank you.
Great answer. Who else? Question for Tom. Okay, so Tom, at the memory and marketing event, I know you talked about the what, the why, and the how. Explain how that works together.
One of the things that I love doing is I'll do what I call legacy coaching, and that's where somebody is in a place of success and significance. And they have a little bit of time in their life, and they now want to leave a legacy. And usually the conversation starts off like this. They'll say, you know what? I don't think what I'm doing is the right thing. And so what they're saying is the business that I run, the career that I have, that I've invested most of my life in, I don't think it's the right thing. What I'm doing is not the right thing. And then so my response is real simple. Hey, what you do is important, but it's not near as important as why you do it. So why do you do it? And you see, that's the deeper question. And when you understand the why and you do it because of the why, it changes how you do it. So I'll give you an example. This guy we were working with, and he was an executive in a company that was like 600 years old out of the UK. I mean, just a huge company, multinational. He's in executive leadership. He's been there for years. He's got an incredible reputation. And he says, I don't think I'm doing the right thing. What I'm doing is the wrong thing. I'm thinking about leaving the company. And I said, oh, really? Well, okay. Well, what do you want to do? And what's your why? And he says, my why is I want to develop young, upcoming leaders. That's where I get my greatest joy and satisfaction. And I said, oh, okay. So in this big company where you're a trusted leader and have all this credibility, do they have any up-and-coming leaders?
Right, people? Right.
He said, well, yeah, we've got a lot of them. And I'm like, well, if your company could keep more of them and move them to the next level and get more productivity and keep balance and stability and increase your retention rate, would that be a win for the company? He's like, yeah, that'd be a huge win for the company. And I'm like, so why don't you go back into the business that you're already in with the explicit why and how linked? Hey, I'm going to develop young leaders right here. I'm going to go to leadership and say, what do you think about me mentoring some people? Let's see what happens. When you know your why, it changes your how. And when your how gets lit up, when your how gets lit up, all the doors of what open wide open. You get the reputation of developing the next, you know, the future leaders of our organization. Do you think they're going to want to keep you and open doors to make you happy? Do you think you're going to get recruited away by the number one competitor because that's your reputation? Absolutely. Because if your why is solid and your how gets lit on fire, the doors of what open wide open.
That's really powerful. And I think I'm kind of playing with that. It's a little different, apples and oranges, but I'm playing with that when it comes to marketing and social media and people writing their blog posts, writing their own book and things like that, where some people think the what is the answer, right? They see an online course, oh, you got to do social media, you got to talk to a list, you got to write a book, whatever it is, and they think it's the what. But it really is, just as you're saying, it's the why. And that's why you can't delegate it out sometimes. You can't hire it out. You have to authentically do it, because that's where the energy and the miracles happen. And then once you kind of have a feel for it, then you can delegate it out, maybe, or hire it out. But there is something about you have to, it's not the what first, it's the why. And once you have the why, you're going to want to do your own social media, you know, if you're an individual. A lot of people are better off not doing certain things than trying to have someone else do it for them and miss the whole why. And because guess what? The people you're hiring could care less about the why, right? They're just doing the job. Yeah. And yeah. I'm generalizing, right?
Right.
But I see that a lot.
So I'll give a why example. I picked on Facebook. Now I'm going to brag on another company. I don't know if you're familiar with Chewy.com. Chewy.com it's everything for pets, like dog food, all that kind of stuff.
As of this past week, when my daughter had a big, huge delivery from Chewy, yes, I know Chewy now.
So we had a lady who worked for us for a long time. She moved away. We've maintained the relationship with her. And she's a dog person. I mean, her dogs are her kids. And her dog died. And she had gotten in the mail, the day the dog died, she gets a 60-pound bag of dog food from Chewy. And wow. So her dog's just died, and she's got this 60-pound bag, and it's reminding her. So she calls up Chewy, and she says, "This is what happened. I lost my baby. My dog died. This bag is unopened. Can I return it?" And so Chewy says, "I tell you what, we're going to credit your order, and we want you to go and donate that bag of dog food to a shelter or anywhere that they might need it. You know somebody who could use it." And so you can just see the atmosphere change, right? Well, the next day her doorbell rings, and there's a bouquet of flowers from Chewy and a handwritten note from the associate who handled her return.
Mm.
Now, that's a why.
Yeah, that's how it's done. That's nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
You don't expect that. And it's so rare in the big companies that when you get it, it's like, guess what? I bet there's probably 50 lifetime loyal customers from that one incident, because this lady tells everybody. That's a why.
So
that's
true.
A why move.
And Tom, I'm thinking of multiple things for me. I hold off on the what until I have, sometimes it's even waiting on the right person. Like the car site, she's on this call, and the car is my editor for the book projects we do. You know, I wouldn't have played the card on doing books, right, if I didn't have the car. I've got a great web guy now, Jacob, and I was holding off on doing a much-needed website change until I had the right person. And sometimes, yeah, you know, just because the what is there, you're better off not doing the what with the wrong person, or doing the what when you're not ready. You're better off just waiting and letting the what play out until you have the why and the how. So I love what you're sharing.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people get caught up because of all the advertising, all the fear of loss, of you got to do this, you got to do that. And I'm talking a lot of it from the marketing space I'm in. So many people are making bad decisions, spend a lot of money actually doing things wrong because they get sold on the what way before they have the proper why and how. And it's kind of a shortcut, quick fix type thing.
You know, you said something very powerful that one of my mentors just taught me. I was having breakfast with him. His name is Bob Teedy. It was about 3 months ago. And he said, "Tom, how are you doing?" And I said, "Man, I'm overwhelmed. I don't think I can handle one more thing." I said, "Good ideas come in, and they just sit on my shoulders and weigh me down because I know there's no way I can do it." And he looks at me and he says, Tom, you're asking yourself the wrong question. The question isn't how can you do it? The question is who do you know who can do it? Because chances are there's somebody who that's their expertise, that's their gift, that's their talent. You already know them. And your job as a leader is not to do all the work, to take on this huge responsibility. It's to empower the people that you already know, love, you know, like and trust to get involved and talk with them to see if they want to do it. So that's something that you just said about it's who, right? It's the right person.
Yeah.
The second right. thing is you just re-said what Seth Godin said. We got to scale trust with every interaction. So if you're wondering, should I do this or not, the question you've got to answer is, if I send out this email to 1,000 people who don't know me, is that scaling trust or is that irritating 999 people?
Right.
Right? So when it gets to the scaling trust thing, that makes the decision-making process easier. Hey, I'd rather write my own email, send it out to 50, and know that none of them are irritated. In fact, a lot of them appreciate it.
Right. That's good. Okay, questions for Tom. Don't be shy.
I have a question, Kyle.
Awesome.
Hi,
yes, awesome.
Thank you. Okay, I just have a question.
Yeah.
Hi, yeah. You mentioned earlier about your family life, and you said that your dad protected, kind of had like this value system in place when he would honor your mom when you were going to different places, and he would not let women, you know, have women around or however, you know, to have that honor for her when they weren't together. Could you elaborate a little bit more on your family upbringing and how the dynamics of that changed as things, or did it, as as your dad had to travel more and things like that, and what were some of those things that you could share with us as we're moving forward with our family to keep our family intact?
Right. So, you know, dad believed that mom was his number one account. So nothing mattered to him except for his number one account. And so growing up, I mean, I can remember being 5 years old in the car, and the car would stop, and dad and I would race to see who could get to mom's door first and open the car door. I mean, that's just the way I was raised. Mom always went first. He protected her walking down the sidewalk, and one of the things that he knew is that he needed to keep that relationship as intact as possible. So he became a Christian in 1972, and right after that, he called Billy Graham, and he said, what do you do to keep your reputation? And dad, all he did was copy what Billy Graham did. And Billy Graham said, hey, I travel the world. I'm never alone with a woman unless it's my wife. Doesn't mean I don't have meetings. It doesn't mean that we don't have business. It doesn't mean we do that. It's just that we always arrange it. So in our offices, we have an open door policy, or we have windows in our offices. You know, when dad would go out to lunch, if it needed to be a business meeting, it was in the office and the doors were open. And if there was lunch involved, there were many people there. There was just never a challenge. And then you look at today's society and people will say, oh, you know, that's old fashioned. That doesn't work anymore. And then you look at people like General Petraeus, who violated the number one military principle of all, which is he didn't guard his castle. I mean, the number one thing in the military is you protect your castle, you protect home base. You lose that, you're going to lose everything. And so he got into a situation which led to the downfall of his career at that time. And he could have easily avoided it. He could have had his assistant in there when he was having the interviews. There's a lot of things that you can do. People don't like to do it because it's not convenient, but once again, it goes back to your core values and what you really believe. And dad said, my wife is my number one priority. G.K. Chesterton is, if you want to look up great quotes, this guy is like the ultimate quote master. G.K. Chesterton said this. He said, never pull up a fence post until you know why it's there in the first place. And I look at all the fence posts that got pulled up, and you get a result like the Me Too movement. I mean, it's just, we reap what we sow. So that's how it was for me growing up. And my sisters are the same way, and it's been awesome.
Very good. One final question, if anyone has a question for Tom.
Hi, this is Udo. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Udo. How are you?
Yeah, I got a question. I like that you are talking about the what and what you do and why you do it. And, you know, I'm kind of thinking that most people in their everyday life, it's like they constantly do stuff and they may be going into routine and they may not realize why they're not happy about their life. But it may be that they keep thinking, like you're talking about, that they're constantly talking about what they do, and they forget to ask themselves why they do it, and so they can't change because they never ask the question why.
I agree 100%. And this is another quote that our business partner, Howard Partridge, said. He says this, your business or your career or whatever you do, but he said your business exists for one reason and one reason only. It's a vehicle to help you achieve your life goals. And I think that's the essence of it. People don't take the time to write down what their life goals are. What are your life goals, right? So one of the quotes that I have is that your goals are the edges of the puzzle of your life. Your goals are the edges of the puzzle of your life. So I want you to think about an old-fashioned puzzle, you know, the tabletop puzzle. It's in the box. There's 500 pieces. You dump it out onto the table. You turn them all over. And what's the first thing that you do? You do the edges, put the edges in. So they did, and I'm a connector, and I read stuff, and I connect things. So I'm reading this book called True Freedom by Stephen Fry, and he talks about these behavioral psychologists, and they go to this elementary school, and the school was brand new, and on the first week of school, the playground was there, but there was no fence around the playground. And so they sit outside, and the recess bell rings. The kids go outside to play, and they watch them. And what they noticed, that with no fence around the playground, the kids all stayed next to the teacher and next to the school building where the playground equipment was. They had all this space to play tag and soccer and football and catch, but they didn't use any of it. They used 10%. And then over the weekend, they put the fence in around the playground. And the Monday morning comes, the school bell, recess bell rings, the kids go out to play. They use the whole field. The fence, the edge, the border, it brings security. And so in our lives, I want you to think about this. In our lives, the playground equipment is all of our experience. It's our skill and talent. It's our knowledge. It's everything we know. And the edge of the playground, where the fence is, that needs to be our goals, the things that we want to be, do, and have, what we want to accomplish, where we want to go, why we're doing what we do, you know, why we're going around this world on this big ball. When we set those goals out there, our brain, when we sleep, it figures out how to connect the puzzle pieces from the playground equipment to the fence. In other words, when we set a goal, our brain starts to operate saying, how are we going to get that? How are we going to get that? How are we going to get that? So people who are stuck and unhappy and just going through the motions, it's because they don't have dreams and goals. They haven't articulated, they haven't written them down. Or they don't believe there's any hope of them ever getting it. And so they give up. And so that's what we do at Ziegler, is we give you the hope to go for it. We show you how to get there. And then we say, really, it's habits that you can learn on your own that make it a reality.
Right.
So, Tom, that is...
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks, Udo. Tom, that's powerful. And that's a Tomism. You have a lot of Tomisms. I remember years ago, it was all Zigisms, right? Now there's so many Tomisms. And I love that illustration. That's so powerful. And I know that's something I'm going to run with. I've taken 4 pages of notes, and I'm looking forward to we recorded the call. I'm looking forward to having it transcribed. I'm going to have someone transcribe it tomorrow just so I can look at the notes. So this such a powerful, so much wisdom, so many nuggets. Tell us what you're up to now. Tell us how people can get a hold of you. Tell us if you have anything coming up on the calendar. So if people want to engage, they can.
All right. Well, it's real easy to get a hold of us. I do something kind of weird these days. I give out my email, and it's an easy one. Yeah, it's an easy one. It's tom@ziegler.com. So that's kind of fun, having your whole name as the email. And there's really 3 things that I love to do. I love what I already mentioned earlier, the legacy coaching. I love speaking and writing. And sharing the message and being invited to groups like this with people who are what I call the next level. You know, they're serious about becoming what I say the person God created you to become, becoming the best version of yourself. People who are on that journey and realize they don't have all the answers and they want to go to that next step. That's who I love associating and speaking to. That's who I write for. That's what I think about every day. And I think about the person who has all the ability and they're not using it. You know, how do we get them inspired? How do we get them to the next side? And then the passionate thing that I have that kind of feeds into that is we have our certification. We actually certify people to go out and teach our materials. And we have over 300 certified speakers and trainers in over 19 different countries. Kyle, a few years ago, I was over in Papua New Guinea. Off of Australia, teaching our stuff with one of our certified
awesome.
Trainers from Papua New Guinea. And I mean, who would think you would go to Papua New Guinea? And I felt like Shaquille O'Neal. I was like a foot taller than everybody there. It was the most awesome people ever in the world. And I will tell you this, it doesn't matter where you go, people have a heart for truth. Mm-hmm. And when you share that truth in love, that's how you get received. It's just an amazing thing. So that's what I love doing. That's what we have going on. Email's just the easiest way to reach me.
Yeah, and you guys have some amazing events. I remember when you started the Ziegler certification, and to already have 300 people that have gone through it, that's incredible. So many of my good friends have gone through it. So if you want to engage with Tom, and the website is Ziegler.com, right, if people want to see some of your upcoming events.
Right.
Awesome. Well, hey, guys, unmute yourself, and let's give Tom a big thank you. Tom, just so appreciate you being on call tonight. And with this, we'll say goodnight. Thanks so much, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Great call, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Tom.